Hi, I'm Heidi Jo Castro. Welcome to The Stream. For years, climate activists have centered their work around stopping some of the world's biggest polluters, from fossil fuel companies to industrial farming. And while they remain some of the main contributors to the climate crisis, there is a lesser known climate culprit that's often forgotten, and it is a big one, the military. Today we ask, are militaries driving the climate crisis? But first, let's hear from David Vine, a professor at American University.
If we're going to save ourselves from global warming, global heating, climate change, we have to take on the elephant in the room, the 800-pound gorilla. We have to take on U.S. military missions. The U.S. military is the single largest institutional emitter of carbon on the planet. We have to take it on, and we're not going to do it by building more solar panels on military bases and buying e-vehicles. Those are good things. But we have to do it by stopping current U.S. wars, preventing future U.S. wars, and dramatically cutting the size of the U.S. military budget.
Joining us to discuss from Lancaster, England, Stuart Parkinson, Executive Director of Scientists for Global Responsibility. In Northampton, Massachusetts, Lindsay Kashgarian, Program Director with the National Priorities Project. And also with us from the lovely island of Hawaii, Marcy Winograd, Coordinator for Code Pink Congress. Such a pleasure to have the three of you join us here on the stream. Now, there is so much to unpack here, right? This is an underreported topic, military emissions, and we will get to the lack of transparency and the increase still in military spending. But first, I just want to get our heads around the scope of this problem, because we just heard David call it an elephant in the room. And Stuart, you know just how big this elephant is, don't you?
Yeah, at Scientists for Global Responsibility, last year we published a report trying to estimate the size of the global carbon footprint of the world's militaries. And we estimated that it was about 5.5% of the world's carbon emissions. Mm. And if it were a country, if the world's militaries were a country, then they would be equivalent to the fourth largest country in the world. They would be bigger than the whole of Russia.
Wow.
So it's a really quite huge problem.
And these, the emissions that we're talking about here, we'll get to, you know, the impact of active combat. But we're also talking about the daily activities of the military. Lindsay, I know this is something that you've looked into closely. What is it that maybe we take granted for granted that militaries around the world do on a day-to-day basis that emit a lot of carbon?
Yes. So of course, David mentioned in the clip or just a moment ago the impact of wars. And of course, that's probably the first thing we all think of. But there are daily military activities that are actually responsible for a huge amount of emissions. The U.S. military is by far the biggest military in the world. The U.S. outspends the next 10 countries combined on our military. And the largest source of our emissions is jet fuel, the burning of jet fuel. And that's not just in combat missions. It's in training missions. Where I live in Northampton, Massachusetts, we have training flights that go over my house. And probably a lot of listeners do, too. This is something that happens all over the world. The U.S. has, according to findings from Professor Vine, has over 750 military installations in the world. Those all come with some carbon emissions to varying degrees. And it's everything from, you know, smaller installations, maybe just a radar installation, to bases in Germany and South Korea and Japan that have tens of thousands of U.S. soldiers and come with really significant carbon impacts. So it's all of those activities that add up to the U.S. military in particular having a carbon emissions footprint that is larger than many developed countries.
Wow. And of course, there's all these tentacles, right? You know, there's these bases that have all the support infrastructure, the constant trucks that bring in supplies. And then there's also the contractors. Stuart, I know you wanted to jump in.
Yes, I was going to say the whole supply chain of the militaries, the sort of things that you're talking about, the supply chain is huge as well. And that often gets forgotten in estimations of military carbon emissions. So the direct effects are very bad. Supply chain is very bad. And then the impacts of war itself, and my estimate didn't include the impacts of war itself. So when towns are bombed and they're set afire, when fuel depots are bombed, when forests are bombed, they all add to carbon emissions as well.
And that's exactly what I wanted to ask Marcy about. Marcy, I know with Code Pink, you are with an anti-war group, and you guys have produced a video about Ukraine, and though we don't have numbers on what the emission may be from the military activities there, it is obvious to the plain eye the destruction of the environment. So I wanted to first watch this video together, and then Marcy, if you'll jump in and tell us more about it.
Sure.
Russian attacks on Ukraine's chemical and oil storage facilities have released plumes of smoke with toxic particulate matter, gases, and heavy metals that damage the lungs, worsen air quality, and make it difficult to breathe in the industrialized east of Ukraine. Explosions, falling buildings, and trenches and tunnels dug for battle increase the release of particulate matter. Weapons of war, from rockets to missiles to tanks, emit tons of carbon and particulate matter that pollute the air and increase greenhouse gases.
Yes, Heidi. So I made that film with my colleagues at Code Pink.
That's right.
Benjamin,
that was your voice.
Michelle Illner. Yes. And so we felt it was very important to look at the environmental impacts of the war in Ukraine as we push for a ceasefire. I'm also the co-chair of the Peace in Ukraine Coalition, which represents over 100 organizations, saying that, you know, it's time for diplomacy to end this war, not only because of the hundreds of thousands potentially deaths that have resulted, or people being wounded, and the destruction of infrastructure, but also the environmental impacts, as you saw in that film. And very few people realize that 50 to 100,000 dolphins have washed up dead in the Black Sea as a result of war, with all sides being responsible, you know, because of the detonations, the noise, and so forth. So I just want to say that as an anti-war organization, we have a campaign. War is not green. And I thank you, Heidi. I thank Al Jazeera English for highlighting this, because as David said, this is the elephant in the room, the Pentagon.
And, you know, we're talking about Ukraine now, and unfortunately, I think the data on how much destruction it is wreaking on the country, on its people, on the environment, that will be coming in for years. But we have a little idea, don't we, Marcy, about, you know, how, what havoc in Iraq the U.S. invasion wreaked with its burn pits and its desertification.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. I mean, globally, the U.S. military has hundreds of Superfund sites. And an internal study by the Department of Defense in 2022 indicated that there are that people are being contaminated all over the world from our PFAS. These are toxic chemicals, carcinogenic chemicals that are used in foam to put out fires on aircraft. And these are leaking into the groundwater. I'm in Hawaii right now, Heidi. You know, my heart goes out to the people of Hawaii, because in many ways, this is occupied territory. And just take, for example, Oahu, Honolulu, the red fuel leakage into the aquifer has contaminated
from the
water for 100,000 people in Honolulu. Mm-hmm. So I think that this has to be addressed, and I thank you for addressing this.
Right. Lindsay,
Marcy,
you wanted to jump in
there. So the Red Hill facility, the U.S. Navy facility in Red Hill, Hawaii, has leaked fuel into drinking water. And that is just one of, remember, more than 750 military installations from the U.S. alone in the world. So if you think about that multiplied in impacts and, you know, other chemicals that Marcy talked about and other pollutants, the impact worldwide of the U.S. military alone is enormous. And then Stuart also talked about, you know, the private side. And we have a U.S. military where half of the military budget, fully half, goes to contractors. And they have a carbon impact as well, through the manufacturing of weapons, through transport of materials, through all of it. There are so many impacts. And it's not just carbon emissions. It is all of these other pollutants as well.
Yeah, I just want to put up
point. I just want to say that we feel the answer is to reverse course, because we are in a trajectory to multiply these carbon emissions as we increase U.S. bases. We are opening a new base in Guam for 5,000 Marines. We are dredging the ocean, the beautiful ocean in Okinawa, for a new military base. So as we prepare, you know, first there's Ukraine. That's terrible. You know, what's happening there. We have to put an end to this. And now we are preparing for a war with China.
You know,
so we're surrounding China.
I want to bring this back to
global militaries as well.
Yes. And Stuart, I want to bring this question to you, actually, because hitting on what all of you just mentioned, right? It's in a sense, it's like these militaries are expanding, the bases are expanding, but in a sense, we have our heads buried in the sand because we don't even know how big truly the problem is. Stuart, you've done great work in uncovering some of this data, but that took a lot of effort, didn't it? Because there's a lack of transparency.
Yes. I mean, the data is very poor, and the uncertainties on my estimates, I freely admit, are wide. And that is because the data isn't there. The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the UN's leading climate science body on this issue, it publishes no figures on military carbon emissions.
Why is that? Why doesn't it publish those?
And this is because militaries publish very few figures themselves. A small number do, some more are starting, but often the data is hidden.
And they're not required to publish it, are they?
No.
In fact, there's
a lot of exemptions, and then it's hidden amongst categories. So, for example, military bases, the data is hidden under public buildings. Military aviation, it's hidden broadly under aviation. Arms industry is under industry. International emissions, so emissions from planes, ships in international waters or airspace, those aren't counted within national inventories at all. So this is a huge problem, and trying to estimate these figures becomes very difficult. So you have to take data from all over the place and then make some assumptions, extrapolations, we need far better measurements. So, we need militaries being required to publish the data, and then we need to have them brought within targets so that their emissions reductions are required and they're not exempt from both reporting and...
So it's
and
clear, what is clear is the lack of transparency, ironically. What is also clear is that the United States has pushed for exemptions for military reporting in these climate protocols at these climate conferences that have been held ever since the Kyoto Protocol.
Right, and actually,
you know,
speaking of that,
you don't have to report this. So first it was don't report this. Now it is you don't have to.
All the way up to the Glasgow conference, right, Marcy? And that I actually wanted to show you and our viewers and everyone else a clip from COP26 because military emissions completely left off of the agenda. But we had a journalist named Abby Martin who confronted the former U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. This is their exchange.
How can we seriously talk about net zero if there is this bipartisan consensus to constantly expand this large contributor to climate change, which is exempt from these conferences? Military is exempt from climate talks.
The national security advisors all tell us that the climate crisis is a national security matter. It is, of course, a health matter for our children, the water they drink, the air they breathe, et cetera. It is a jobs issue between clean technologies being the future of our workforce and the training for all of that. It is a national security issue because of the conditions that climate crisis produces. I won't go into all of them, but they do are cause for migration, conflict over habitat and resources, and again, a security challenge globally.
Lindsay, I know you were hearing that too. She said a lot, but she never actually answered the question, did she? I mean, what I was hearing, I think, from Pelosi is almost a justification, and this has been the official Department of Defense response from the U.S., that almost saying a bigger military is required to confront the climate crisis. And of course, it's a feedback loop, isn't it? Lindsay, what do you make of
that? Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's the military and our military leaders in the U.S. are very quick to admit that the climate crisis is a national security crisis. And of course, it's a global security crisis and a planetary security crisis. So it's even more than they're acknowledging. But when they say it's a national security crisis, they mean something different than how we might think about it. Hmm. What they mean is that it's a crisis for their military. They mean that there are, you know, military bases, naval bases that may be victim to sea rise levels and that they need to accommodate for that. They mean that they need to prepare militarily for migration crises that will arise because of climate change, or that they need to prepare for a military response to climate crises that might come about from things like water scarcity or other climate crises that displace people and things. So that's what they're talking about, all of these things. And we need to be really careful when we talk about military emissions. There is a segment of the military that is all too happy to take more public dollars and use it to do things like put solar panels on bases and find alternative jet fuels that may be lower emission, but that don't do anything to address the underlying problems of militarism. And we really need to watch out for that greenwashing, because that is exactly what the Pentagon is trying to do right now. They are pursuing alternative fuels. They are pursuing solar panels on bases. The U.S. Air Force is pursuing a net zero ultimate policy. But we need to guard against all of that, because what they're looking to do is maintain the same levels of militarism while cutting back somewhat on their climate emissions. But they'll still be addressing the climate crisis itself by sending troops or militarizing borders where there are climate crises and things like this. So we need to really be on the lookout for that.
And this is where the situation that we currently find ourselves in, where global military spending has reached $2.2 trillion a year, which is the highest level since the Cold War and possibly many times during the Cold War. And again, it's accelerating. We are in arms races, and wars tend to occur when there are arms races, and the situation in Ukraine, I think, is a good example of this.
Yeah.
We need to tackle the roots of conflict. We need to tackle the roots of the climate crisis.
Go ahead. Keeping emissions.
Go ahead, Marcy.
In terms of that climate crisis. Helping in development of poorer countries, and also reducing the emissions of both richer countries and the wealthy in those countries.
Absolutely. Marcy, you think about it. Go ahead, Marcy.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you can see that this war in Ukraine, there is no plan to end it. And there is a climate threat that is even more urgent than the climate crisis. And that is the threat of nuclear war. And even President Biden admitted that any walk down this path could lead to Armageddon with, we're looking at the annihilation of 5 billion of the 8 billion people on Earth. As we conduct a proxy war between two nuclear powers, the United States and Russia, which possess 90% of the world's nuclear weapons.
And Marcy, we must dedicate hours to that very topic. But right now, I want to bring us back to emissions. And, you know, there is some recognition, there's some evidence, at least here in the United States, that there is a need for the military to be more transparent. And I wanted to bring up a letter that was written by 28 members of Congress, all Democrats, sent to President Biden. This was January of 2022, in which they said, put simply, we will never achieve the reductions necessary to avoid the most catastrophic effects of climate change, nor meet our economy-wide obligations under the Paris Climate Agreement, while ignoring the climate impact of the U.S. military. But, Marcy, we never got a response from the Biden administration. Did this happen? No. Instead, they asked Congress for $850 billion of new military spending in 2024. Are you troubled by this?
Very troubled, and not only am I troubled by the Biden administration's push for expanded military budgets, I'm troubled by the congressional push. We have a bipartisan push for an ever-expanding military. You know, it was increased under Trump, it's increased under Biden. I was listening to the House Armed Services Committee hearing the other day, and I hear on both sides of the aisle saying, well, we need more troops in Europe. In the Baltic states, we have 82,000 troops in Europe. So now they're gonna fly more troops over there and emit more greenhouse gas emissions. This is not the trajectory that we need to be on. And one of the issues, Heidi, is that the military is taking its cue from think tanks that are funded by military contractors, there's all this money. Follow the money, right?
Absolutely. Another issue is, if the U.S. were serious about taking the climate crisis as a national security crisis, we would be investing differently. That $858 billion that the Biden administration requested for the Pentagon is way more than 10 times the only $37 billion a year under the Inflation Reduction Act that is Biden's signature legislative achievement on the climate crisis. Mm-hmm. So we are not taking the funding requirements of the climate crisis seriously. And there's nothing that makes that clearer than the $858 billion that the Biden administration requested for the Pentagon when they've been happy with their signature achievement on the Inflation Reduction Act. That is less than 10% of that for the climate crisis.
I wanted to bring in
and that's
some,
only for the U.S.
I wanted to bring in some more of our comments from our community. This is a video comment that was sent to us earlier by Nick Buxton, a researcher at Transnational Institute, saying that the U.S. has its priorities in terms of military missions all wrong. Let's take a listen.
We need to be clear. The U.S. Army climate strategy is not about fighting climate change. It is, as they say in their conclusion, about deploying, fighting, and winning the nation's wars. The trouble is, there's no such thing as a green war, or indeed a green empire. Sure, the US Army can put solar panels on its many military bases, but not at the same time it is investing millions more on building fighter jets, naval ships, and servicing its more than 800 military bases around the world. The truth is that to decarbonize, we need to demilitarize. The US needs to turn to international cooperation rather than military might to resolve in the world's conflicts.
And Stuart, my next question is to you, because rather than demilitarize, the US Army this past year released its first climate strategy, which does propose to cut emissions in half by 2030 and be net zero by 2050. Is this enough, and is it even feasible?
Well, I think you've got to look at what those targets really mean. They're looking about cutting carbon emissions that are relatively straightforward to do in things like solar panels on military bases, energy efficiency at military bases. But when it comes to actually reducing emissions of the equipment that they deploy, then all of those are either exempted from the targets or they're predicated on technologies which are either at a very early stage of development or on the drawing board, never being used for military purposes, or they propose using offsets, carbon offsets, which are fraught with problems and very illusionary. So I don't really trust these climate targets unless we get, well, yes.
Right. Our time is unfortunately almost coming to a close, but I wanted to come back to a very important point you all brought up, which mentioned the Cold War. There's sort of a comparison here, right? I mean, it's almost like there's a need for a carbon disarmament treaty. But even the idea seems, you know, so far distant in the future. I don't know if there's any appetite for it. So in our last remaining minute or two, I just wanted each of you to answer in maybe just 10 to 20 seconds. What is the likelihood that that world's militaries could come together and kind of end this competition of growth, one bigger than the other, making this climate crisis worse? Is that ever going to happen? Stuart, please go first.
It's fairly difficult, but it's something that we have to try. We have to find common ground between countries. It's not just about militaries. It's about finding common ground between nations and looking at what we do have in common, which is a climate crisis that threatens the world's civilization. And we have that in common. And we should build on
that
to help us tackle the problem.
Absolutely. Thank you, Stuart. Lindsay.
Yeah, so this really comes down to what the U.S. and China decide to do. They're the world's two biggest emitters, the world's two biggest militaries, and two huge economies. So it's between the U.S. and China to work this out. And the Biden administration can really take leadership by...
Thank you so much, Lindsay. And Marcy, please, I'll give you the final word.
Thank you. Yes, being with Code Pink, you know, my response would be we need to build and amplify this anti-war movement, and we need to stand in solidarity with people all over the globe who are sounding the alarm, demilitarized.
Such an interesting topic. I know we could keep talking, but it's all the time we have for today. Thank you to our guests and for making time to our viewers to watch the stream.